Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows, things I couldn't run. Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry, and the old Lee King.
Ah, that's Alan Jackson.
He was a little man.
But I don't know if Tim or Jeff are country music guys. To me, you live in Texas, so you're a country music guy now?
I am not.
You're not?
I am not.
What if we were to look at your most recently listened to playlist, who would be headlining?
Widespread Panic? Widespread Panic, maybe Humphries McGee, something like that. Those long drawn out bands, particularly the heavy guitar ones, I like to listen to when I'm working out.
Really, Jeff? Huh? What about you, Jeff? What kind of music do you listen to?
Well, I'm still I like Lynyrd Skynyrd and Steve Earle and Johnny Cash. So, but I'm not really like that type of country music right there. I think I get diabetes listening to it or something.
Really?
But, what you just had on. But a lot of it, I like those guys. Creedence Clearwater, that type of stuff. Greg Allman, older of that. Uh-huh. And then I like Boston. I'm like really mired in the late 70s and 80s,
Wow. All right, I want to have you guys on and continue a discussion I started yesterday with Grant Newsom. And we were talking about the amphibious capabilities of China as they continue to build their amphibious fleet, now big decks, and building more, and with evidently, according to them, bigger than what they have on the way, which, and we all know, amphibious, you want to talk about power projection, you know, whether it's the spectrum of humanitarian assistance or conventional kinetic operations. You do it with people going ashore. So it's a pretty interesting road pretty formidable road that China embarks on. So that's kind of talking about the South China Sea, and I mused, well, we kind of have China contained. I had General Tulin on, I don't know, a year or so ago, and he talked about it. He said, well, you know, if you look at it as a kind of a football, play, we have China contained, it's all of our allies in the Pacific contain China, and they're trying to break that containment, but they've got some issues, and if you look at, if you bust out Google Earth, and you look at China, you can see China's issues. They are locked in to mainland China, and you can see the Belt and Road Initiative is an effort to gain backdoor access to the Indian Ocean and other bodies of water. But in my opinion, they could be easily shut down. So I wanted to talk, and so then we got to talking about war in the South China Sea. What would it look like? What would happen? I thought it was kind of interesting, and I started getting people texting me about the electronic warfare things that would happen right off the bat. In terms of satellites getting blown out, GPS going away, and if that happens, then we have a target acquisition issue relative to, we can shoot it from a million miles away. We just don't know where the fuck it is unless we want to service a target list that has Mount Rushmore, Disneyland, and Las Vegas on it. So I wanted to kind of go down that road with you guys. First of all, any kind of general thoughts, Jeff, about China, where it sits geographically, and its development of amphibious warfare? And I, the other comment I made was this, and while I was looking at my Google Earth, there is no country situated in a better position on this planet than the United States of America. two gigantic oceans to the east and the west, friendly neighbors to the north and the south that we have cultivated, certainly. But, I mean, there's no more secure nation by virtue of its geographic location that has more access to the planet than the United States. It's amazing when you look at it. And I thought, well, is that true? And then I started spinning the globe around, right? Brazil, you know, has access to one ocean, not the backside of that continent. The United States has access to boats. You know, Russia, China, right, is essentially hemmed in. You know, Russia is essentially can be hemmed in as well. So it's kind of interesting. So I thought we'd at least start the discussion today at that. So Jeff, all of that thoughts.
Yeah, let's kind of like when you started out talking. I mean, it'd be like, what would the situation be?
Let me ask you this before we go there. Do you have any general thoughts about China, their development of amphibious platforms, and their development of an amphibious capability?
Yeah, I think because of things you just brought up, that they want to kind of like get a little bit more flexibility there. So there's two reasons you build up like that. One is in case you actually want to use it, like say they want to invade Taiwan, or they want to actually make a move like that. The other one is to just have the heft, you know, when you do diplomacy, of people knowing that you are formidable when it comes to that stuff. But, you know, I think the reason they want it is to gain more access. The problem that China has is, it's a big country. It has a lot of different minorities in it, and they got problems with them.
Right.
I mean, if you see what's going on now in Hong Kong, right, they got a million Uyghurs in concentration camps, and those Uyghurs are the only Muslims in the country. But there's a million of them. I mean, it's the only Muslim country it's well known that they're beleaguered, and so China has a lot of interest around the world, particularly in the Muslim world, and that's an issue. So a lot of the things they may want to do, like during the South China Sea, might be have to be put off because of issues they got within them, within their own, you know, borders. And I think they're the type that don't like to do two or three things at once if they can help it, historically.
Yeah, interesting. Timmy, any general thoughts about them as an amphibious power projecting nation?
Yeah, I think building a few amphibious platforms would help them as far as projecting their image, in that would give them a capability to do a NAOP, for instance. They've got a lot of citizens in a lot of crappy places, and the ability to go in and get them out of there, right now that's pretty much only America can do that. That's a capability which I think is reasonable for them to have, but a few amphib carriers doesn't mean that you know how to project force in any meaningful way far from your borders. I don't buy into that. Can they even do a vert rep or do an unrep? I mean, there's a lot to that force projection that's been having a few amphibs that you can station off of a conflict area somewhere to help get your citizens and other citizens out. Which I'm quite frankly, I'm kind of surprised the Russians haven't been doing that.
Yeah,
they
are skilled at, like, I mean, they have those synthetic islands they made, and also there's this huge oil platform that's like butting into the Vietnamese sea space there,
right,
that really has the Vietnamese pissed off at them.
Right.
And it's a huge juggernaut, not juggernaut, but it's, you know, it's a big thing that. I've never seen it. I think one of you guys probably know more about it than me, but it's a big money maker. That's what they're good at. You know that. I mean, there's some imagination and execution of your imaginings there. That's kind of American almost. You know.
Right. I would say this. I mean, their blueprint is right. First of all, they're a totalitarian regime. All right. So it's not like you're going to unleash this creative force someplace that has some downside, which capitalism is. You're going to unleash this monolithic thing on somebody, and you're going to do what the Chinese do, which is use economic coercion, right, and loan you money and then call the loan and foreclose on your port. So it's interesting. And again, you know, the other thing that it makes you appreciate, and you know, when you grow up in America, you just see us do this stuff, right? Our Navy can take us anywhere in the world, put us ashore, and keep us there forever. I mean, we have, you know, the bases we have around the world that we have agreements with, the infrastructure and all of that, the ordnance, the fuel that we have in all those places, maintains American power around, you know, it's a global presence. And, you know, and it, when you think of it, it's amazing. I mean, but it's been built up over, you know, mostly with since World War II, but there was elements of it that existed before that. So when you look at American ability to project power, it is decades old. It is seasoned and mature, and we know how to do it. So it's pretty interesting, I think, as you see the Chinese begin to kind of go down this road, and will they be successful in kind of laying something out for a country like American Samoa or the Solomon Islands? You know, hey, we'll come bearing gifts, and we want you to give us a a saltwater port and rights to this, and we'll pay you for it. And I mean, that is, I would think, pretty intoxicating for a nation that's poor and on its ass, right?
Yeah, our effectiveness that way has atrophied considerably.
But we're still peerless, right? I mean, nobody's close to us.
I don't know. I mean, I was hoping you would know more, but I think we are barely. But I'll tell you, it's just the whole reason we have these Special Force MAGPAS now is because we're running out of amphibs. We used to have 50 of them when we were lieutenants and captains and stuff. We're down to less than, considerably less than 40.
Well, you know, we need to do a deep dive on that. Let's do that next week. Let's, because the Commandant, General Berger, you know, came off the party plank that said 38 amphibs, right? He came off that. And as you've seen that articulated, that's like, okay, first of all, our allies have amphibs. We have other commercial shipping that we can use. We don't need to go there. I'd be curious just to deep dive on that. And, you know, we can all read for a week. And let's kick that around, the whole issue of 38 amphibs.
Let me give you some advice here, Mac, on that subject. The guy we know who's peerless in regards to, you know, procurement and building ships and everything is General Furness. I mean, it was his main issue for a lot of years when he was working up there. And when you talk to him, you're talking to an expert.
All right, we'll see if we'll see if he's free.
My last job on active duty was the Expeditionary Ops Training Group guy in TUMEF, and he was, where was he then? He was up north, but he was so knowledgeable about ships we were trying to get at and deals that had to be made. Yeah, it was very tedious, you know, the stuff he had to go through to try and get things that you'd think would be a no-brainer, but the Navy is not easy to deal with. They got other, you know, they got other opinions about it.
Right. No, he was at OLA, so the whole what we support, what the Navy wants to do, trying to get the Navy to see what we want, you know, the whole process of funding ships and all of that. It's he was integrally involved in that. Timmy, any thoughts before we start talking about a war in the South China Sea?
Yeah. I want to go back to something I mentioned a few weeks ago, which is during that time when there wasn't a lot of direction at the Secretary of Defense level there, the Marine Corps had two operators heading up the Office of Legislative Affairs. I mean, experienced guys. And I think that was they're there for a reason, like getting us extra ships. But back to China, you know, the one thing about the Chinese that they, that comes with the Chinese offers is Chinese tourists, and they're horrible. So the Chinese are not doing themselves any favor. It's not like when the Chinese come to your little island and start paying attention to you and bringing over their workers and their other folks. Like this is a good deal. You know, with us, we give you. It's not like the Roman peace. We give you the American prosperity. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Dubai or out and about in Kuwait or a place like that. But if you wanted to in 1960 devise a program to ruin those countries, Operation Fast Food was the way. Because it's illegal to have a cold French fry in Dubai. I mean, they will deport Filipinos over that stuff. You've never seen places like that more densely populated with American fast food joints than some of these places that we've that have experienced prosperity underneath us. And Google Kuwait plus diabetes plus overweight.
Yeah,
for us, if we like you, you're going to get the McDonald's and stuff, but it's going to be a slow death. With the Chinese, they just put these horrible tourists in your place, and everybody gets in bad mood very quickly.
They need them. How are they going to steal our ideas unless they have tourists? They're going to steal our intellectual property. Because like Max said, they're a monolith. Right. You know, you're not allowed to have ideas over there. Having ideas is worse than having two kids. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, how pissed off do you think they were this week? The 70th anniversary, right, of the founding of the nation, and the headlines around the world are of Hong Kong. Hong Kong shit hijacked, right? The great military technology parade.
I mean, so they shot to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, they must have been pissed. All right, so let's talk about war in the South China Sea. So, I don't know how a war would start there. Does it matter how it starts there?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I just don't know enough about what they're. Would they just do a surprise attack or grab something? Because my gut feeling about war in the South China Sea is you can perform a fait accompli if you can grab something and hold it quick enough. You know, I mean, grab something and hold it and fortify it enough so that it's too expensive to take back. And, I mean, that's what our exercises are built around.
Okay, so what would that be, though? Okay, so we could talk about causes, but I don't really want to spend too much time on the causes because the causes could be varied and many, right? I mean, it could be, you know, they sink a ship, we sink three, right? People surge in the area now, you know, it could be a variety. They shoot down an airplane, we shoot down six, now, you know, we both move into the area, and now, you know, so... go ahead, Jeff. I mean,
I was thinking maybe, like, they would say, look, we got to get ahead. So we're going to grab four of those Spratly Islands. And if there's a fight over it, we'll give back one. And then try and deal so we can keep the other three. And if we have to, maybe give up another one. We're holding the line at two. And that would entail... You know, an amphibious operation that would entail, and then would we go and do a counter out amphibious? Would we try and push, take it back? Would we do some kind of Iwo Jima type thing there in the South China Sea? I mean, and they have to look at other stuff too. I mean, there's some pretty formidable people there in the South China Sea that don't like China. Vietnam, for one. The Philippines. I mean, we should cultivate the Philippines and Japan. I mean, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and they're real pricks during the death march and stuff.
Right.
But we need them now. We need guys. We need soldiers and combatants with grit because I don't know if we. If this thing might go so fast that you know, by the time we were to get our shit together, it'd be too late, and you know, it might not be worth all the blood and treasure to take back a couple of Spratly Islands.
Well, you know, okay, now,
I guess you're right. I mean, I gotta get off the idea of why. I'm always trying to think what would precipitate it.
And so we can get off the why. Unless you have any comments about the why, Tim, you want to make?
No. I think that Jeff is right. The Spratlys would be about the point of contention, and I think they would be overusing the little green men would trigger it. But once it's triggered, let's go ahead and move on to that because that's more interesting.
Yeah, I think it is. So I'm looking at the map of so like why do we care? Here's my question. So I'm Admiral McNamara of the Pacific of Paycom, Indo-Paycom now. Why do I give a fuck about Spratly Islands? What are they now? So the sequence is, you know, we blind each other's satellites. Like, okay, everything out of space gets fried. All GPSs go blank. Okay. So now, what's our biggest problem now? The Navy can't navigate at sea anymore. Fuck, what the fuck are we going to do now? No, I'm just kidding about that.
You're right, because the way things are now, when you're talking about big nations like this, hasn't really happened. But I think right away it spreads. Right away, you know, our guys in Afghanistan takes on a whole new meaning to us than it did before. It's now part of the South China Sea thing.
Okay.
Because it's in China's back door. Okay. And then South Korea, too. You know, it's like it can't stay contained anymore. You know, there's both countries have too much technological
capability.
So we've lost some of it, you know.
All right, so let's talk about the electronic warfare piece. Now, that thing goes, right, they're attacking our electrical grid. We're shutting parts of China off. We both do that, right? Until everybody unplugs from the internet. Everything's powered down. Nobody can get to anybody electronically anymore. So you have the EW piece, you have the cyber piece, right? Those things are ongoing. And so I don't really want to melt it down over that, but that would be the backdrop. So you're essentially going to fight World War II style, right? With more lethal weapons and airplanes that don't have open cockpits. So now, why do we give a fuck about the South China Sea? You can route, right? All commercial traffic can be routed south of Sumatra and Malaysia, right? Towards, you know, towards Perth and Darwin, and then up through there, right? We can sit and contain them on, on the backside of the Philippines. We can launch missiles at them all day from there.
Yeah, now you get into the mix about diplomacy, though. It's like, it probably matters to the Philippines about the Spratly.
But again, if you're on the Spratlys and this shooting starts, you're done. you're going to be done. Don't even put your earplugs in, right? Don't even waste time.
It's like, almost like the Falklands in a way, but...
right, I mean...
But more expensive and more valuable, you know?
Right, so we're gonna stand off from each other, and it's gonna be what, a naval, aviation, and missile event. And so I'm trying to envision, you know, let's just say company or battalions. What becomes key terrain? Radio retrain sites become key terrain because without them you can't acquire targets, you can't transmit targeting data. You know, based on what you see, you know, almost like the Australian Coast Watchers, those guys.
Yeah.
Right, in World War II, but if you can't talk, you can't relay that information, and all the satellite shit's gone. Do either one of you know, do we have low-orbiting satellites that we can turn off and turn on that are stealth-capable? Do we have anything like that that we could regenerate some kind of capability in a local area?
I don't know that. I know that... go ahead, Tim.
I don't think that stripping the satellites is as easy. I think there's so much redundancy up there that would be a little bit more difficult. But you've also, you can't just clear the South China Sea of merchant traffic, and you can't just say, we'll just reroute it and go around Indonesia. Well, you might have to, but that's not an insignificant problem.
Oh no, I know. If you're Singapore, right? You're going to go ape shit.
We're talking about a huge disruption of the international.
Oh fuck yeah!
Trade. Yeah. This is a gigantic big deal. Even before you start shooting at each other,
right?
It might be that's the aim of the Chinese. So all of a sudden, all these countries we've got agreements with that we're going to help, we decide not to help them because we all of a sudden decide it's not worth it. They ask us, well, thank you for your service, please leave, and now they belong to China. And so, I mean, that might be, you know what I'm saying, that might be one of the goals they have of trying to grab something. And then, because if they're ready and they do it quick, we would have to take it back, and taking it back would be difficult.
What would they grab? I mean, when you say grab something, we don't give a shit about a couple islands. I mean, those things would be annihilated within minutes.
Or we could cut them off. We could cut them off of all supplies and starve them out. We don't have to soak them.
Well, my point is that if you so in looking at the map, right? When you look at the map of that, we can straight up contain them. And they're a landlocked country. When we shut off, and let's just say we fought, so there's going to be a big fight at the mouth of the Malaccan Straits, right?
Right.
Off Singapore. There's going to be a huge fight for that piece of water, right? And let's just say, and we win that. If we win the Malaccan Straits, we can control what goes in, right, to the Gulf of Thailand. We can go into what goes into southern Vietnam, and they can truck shit from there, right? And we can, and then we have China contained. So beyond that, then we just blockade them and say, fuck you. So when I was thinking of this, I was like, well, you know, the Spratly Islands and all that, that's all bullshit. But when the shooting starts, those things are so fucking dead, it's not even funny. So I'm just curious, as you guys look in the map, right?
What would be the aim of what? I assume you don't think we would start the war. There would be an attack from the Chinese.
Yeah.
For some reason.
A mistake, most likely.
Well, and again, I don't want to get into the why, right? Because we could chase our tail all day. But so once it does happen, and let's just say for the sake of argument that for the sake of discussion that you know virtually all of the satellite shit is blown out, and so we revert back to. You know, essentially, you know, World War II style communications, be it more sophisticated. And so, what is the American interest ought we not to contain them as opposed to conducting another huge amphibious operation?
So we have to defeat them. Navally, I mean,
right.
It'd be a naval battle.
It's a naval battle, right?
And so we need to, our Navy ain't in shape right now. It needs to get in better shape for sure.
No doubt. But so it's a naval.
Yeah, but you grab some basin rights out of Vietnam back into the Philippines, maybe even Taiwan. Jeez, that's not a hard one because you'd have to put your planes there.
Yeah.
But boy, you could dominate them. I would think pretty easily.
Remember though, in The Godfather, they strangled Luca Brasi before they made the move against the Don. I gotta say, they anticipate some of that shit and take steps. You know, like when be right before, almost concurrent with 9/11, they assassinated Massoud, the head of the Northern Alliance, knowing that we'd probably come back in there, and they didn't want that guy. You know, right away hammering at their door. I mean, you know, that was an al-Qaeda operation. And just like the Japanese, almost concurrent with Pearl Harbor, they hit the Philippines, you know, knocked out a lot of our air that we had. Precisely, it's kind of similar to what you're talking about, Mac, because they didn't limit themselves to just, you know, their immediate gains. They wanted the oil and rubber. But they had to, they hit Pearl Harbor, and all they wanted was if something like this was to happen, you have to figure out. I mean, what do we got that is valuable and formidable there, and how, you know, might that be a target? You know, might that be a target?
Yeah, I just
and stuff.
So when you think about the South China Sea, and you know, and people talk about, you know, rising tensions in the outside in the South China Sea. To me, China's screwed, man. They're a nation that has one coastline, right? And they're trying to build roads to other bodies of water, which could be easily destroyed, right? Okay, so, and when this happens, those are destroyed. Those things get turned off immediately. So they have one coastline. They're hemmed in by going from north to south. South Korea, Japan, right, Taiwan, the Philippines, which is in some state of flux right now, and we'll just say it is. So they're and then Australia. So they're hemmed in completely north to south. And so, you know, so this thing lights off, ships get sunk, people get killed, right? Forces surge into the region, satellites get blown out, our digital shit gets gassed. And so now, you know, we can see as far as our AWACS can see, right? And they got to be up all the time, right? And unless we can regenerate, we have some way to regenerate that shit. So let's say we don't. And let's say they're in the same boat. So you have this dance of radar, right? And then you have, you know, people on islands that are watching and they're reporting and whatnot. And you're trying to, and really the fight is what? A target acquisition fight. Because if we know where it is, right? We can then cold nose send people in without radar, knowing that we have a spot on them. And then right before they shoot, they go radar hot. Poof, they launch and they smoke whatever we're tracking. And that becomes, I mean, it becomes a target acquisition fight, at least kinetically anyway.
Well, there'd be a major submarine action, too.
Right.
They have the diesel subs that don't use nuclear, technology, but they're very formidable. And they don't have to worry about long range, John. You know what I mean? They already are there, you know? So that would be a...
But
submarine.
I think what's interesting about the sub business, and I don't know that much about it, but I mean, all the drone shit that now they put out, and that stuff can ping its ass off, man. Go ahead and ping your hearts till your heart, you know, ceases to function, right? But you're going to provide me security by pinging, and we're going to find anybody who's out there, we're going to find them. And go ahead.
You know, the other thing about this is something I said a few months ago, and that is, China unleashes a hypersonic missile and takes out a carrier. I mean, wipes that thing out, and we lose all hands. What do you think happens next? You know, I think there's the one thing about worrying about this kind of stuff is there's got to be a ratcheting up of tension that doesn't start with a catastrophic kill of American assets, because once we get pissed about something like that. There's you know, you're talking Carthaginian solution type of retribution, and only we can do that.
That'd be some blood there, man.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. So I get worried about it because if you're talking about a target acquisition fight that's not high tech, you're talking about being forced to improvise, and this is clearly an American strength. It's clearly not a Chinese strength. So if we've got to find airfields to get closer to improvise to kick their asses, we have airfields that are close that we can fall in on. Chinese don't. They don't have shit. You know? So I like our odds a lot. But I still think if somehow they get kinetic and they wipe out they take out a carrier or a carrier plus a bunch of other ships, well, what the hell do you think comes next? Because it's going to be goddamn unpleasant, and people are going to lose their minds, and that's what happens when a country loses its mind like that.
No, I just find as we kind of talked about it yesterday, I things kind of started going in my head as I looked at the geography, like, you know, those fortified islands, they're nothing now, they're meaningless now, because now we're going to have a shooting war, and what we're going to try to do, in my opinion. You know, strategically, we're gonna strangle China. We're gonna make the Chinese pay for their geographical predicament. And you're contained, and you're not gonna break contain, and we're not going to allow it. And so,
we're playing risk. Well, we help them.
Well, we're in a position where the United States, we're not gonna be affected economically. You know,
that's right.
We're not. We're too far away. And you could shoot a hypersonic missile like 2 million miles and hit Mount Rushmore. Go ahead. See what happens.
That would really suck to hit Mount Rushmore.
They blew Teddy Roosevelt's forehead off.
That would piss me off.
Exactly. But because you can't target anything that's dynamic, right? Your targeting equation's fucked. And so that's the limitations of these weapons. Yeah, they go really fast and they can shoot thousands of miles. But if you can't know where the target is, like Timmy was talking about, an aircraft carrier. Right. If in the very first outset of the conflict, everybody's lights get blown out. Now go ahead, find our aircraft carriers now. Can't. Not gonna do it. And so it gets interesting. And then what interest do we have inside the South China Sea to go take it back? And I think the answer to that is none. The interest we have is putting them on their knees because of their geographic, you know, disadvantage.
What do you think will happen in Korea then? Because North Koreans are like, they're like a rabid pit bull for the Chinese. They let them go. And so they decide to let them go again. I mean, so we do strangle them. And then
that's the next question. So does that conflict in the South China Sea, does that become a world conflict? Does Russia join?
Yeah.
Does Russia join China?
I don't know if they join China, but I know.
Does Iran join China?
We cross swords with these guys now. And I'm talking with China, Russia, or Iran. It's going to be global. They will not be mentally contained to any one theater. The only reason they would do that would be as if the retaliation in other theaters was so great that it would be, they wouldn't have anything to gain from it. Then I would say we should always look at that then too. I think they could get help, like the situation we have now with Iran. If something popped up with China, that's their natural ally now, Iran.
Right.
But both China and Iran got some serious damn cash flow issues. Who the hell's going to side with China on a global conflict against us, knowing that the rest of the South Pacific is going to be with us, so we can count on Japan, Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, blah, 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 Australia. Who the hell's going to bet on China? They'd have to be lunatics.
Yeah. See, somebody said that to me today. Well, Russia and Iran would both throw in China as,
I don't know about Russia, man.
Well, I mean, Iran is how much money is China going to waste defending Iran? Answer is zero. So the Americans, they smoke our entire Navy, right? They annihilate everything, that is above ground that they can target. And then we're rolling around. We're rolling around in our Land Rovers with the RGC looking for something to do because we can't get any place anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, again, so, I mean, to me, I don't, Yeah, China, the parade is great. But that's what I thought was interesting about this, these questions that come up. And then when you start to pull them apart, I mean, if you were the president of Iran, would you throw in with China and say, yeah, launch all tubes on the Americans?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be like that. There'd be desperation deals after this happened, I think. Like, they're saying, look, we think there's a 65% chance America's going to say the juice ain't worth the squeeze, and they're not going to really react too much. Maybe there'll be a little bit of kinetics, and then we'll have some kind of bullshit, talks. And like you said, we don't really care about those islands anyway, so no big deal. And they'll get a little bit more breathing space. But it doesn't work out that way because we're Americans. And maybe they're too successful and they knock out, either one of the big amphibs or, God forbid, an aircraft carrier. And now there's it's not just Jim Joe and Timmy. Now it's Susie Jeannie, and it's like you got girls floating dead. And so, I think what Tim was saying then, it could be that America's still got it in them for that, that rage thing where they're going to be behind whoever says, we're going to make China hurt for this. And that's when they go to these other countries. And because right away, the countries that we're at odds with in other ways, too, they're going to think this might be an opportunity for me to get some relief, i.e. like Iran, relief from these crippling sanctions. If we say to America, hey, maybe they try to make a deal with us, or maybe they just say, hey, we'll cozy up to the Iranians now. I think, whatever, if they attack us, we should do whatever we can to strike back so hard they never do it again. We just got to be aware that this thing will probably spread in a big way. Not just the other geographical areas we talked about, But I mean, embassies being shot up by, you know, terrorists and stuff, and bombs going off in the UN and so forth. You know, that type of thing. It'll be, you know, the sky's the limit with things now, I think.
Timmy?
I think what Jeff is saying is probably what we're going to see in the future, in that we're sitting here brainstorming this in a half hour, and you can look at this and say, oh, there's no fucking way China's screwed. There's no way this is going to end well for them. China obviously knows this pretty well too, and therefore it's in their best interest to keep fomenting all kinds of conflict and disagreements and whatever they can to keep everybody to keep their interests alive in other parts of the world, because they're not going to be able to do it by becoming replacing a dollar with their yen. That's just not. Oh, I don't even know what their currency unit is, but you know, whatever it is, nobody wants it, and so they're going to have to eventually, in order to enforce their will, they're probably going to use the little green men and a continuing a destabilization process, because that seems to work.
Yeah,
you know, they're not looking for the big quick thing. They're pretty methodical, and you know, they're just like, they want to, there's a certain inevitability about that. They never give up, but they never really push too hard, you know, in one way either. I mean, since Mao weighed in Korea, I'll tell you, that book on Dangerous Ground, I finished it. The suffering is incredible there. But, I mean, mainly for the Chinese soldiers.
Hey, Jeff, tell everybody who wrote the book and what the book's about, just so.
God damn it.
Hold on, dude. I got it right here. I got it after you were talking about it yesterday. Or last time we were on.
Yeah, so the guy's name is Matt Kerrigan. Hang on for 1 second.
Wait, he's coming. Let's see. Hampton Sides.
Yes, Hampton Sides.
Right.
That is a standing book. And it was recommended to me by Bob Coates, who kept coming into my office and hounding me for not reading it yet. And I'll tell you, once I got into it, it was very, and it's kind of instructive about China, you know, because it goes into...
Well, hold on, let me just... the book is entitled On Desperate Ground, the Marines at the Chosin Reservoir, The Korean War is the Greatest Battle, written by Hampton Sides. So you can get this on Amazon right now.
I have to tell you guys, so there's a part in there, there's a few parts where they go, and you're on the level of President Truman. And, like, the Chinese, even though they weren't recognized by the UN, they had a huge delegation in New York, right in the middle of all this, like in November, right? And they're, like, their entrance into the UN really changed it. You know what I mean? It really made it the useless organization it is now, I think. Because, they just launched polemic after polemic in the UN Security Council, and meanwhile, this thing's going on with the Chinese in the war in a huge way, and MacArthur not wanting to face that. It just didn't fit in with his image he had in his mind, and because most of the officers who worked for him, not all but most, were very syncopants, they were kiss asses to the max. They went along, especially Almond, you know, who was the 10th Corps commander of the 1st Marine Division.
Right. I don't want to get too stuck in that, but your point is that book has great lessons about China and the suffering that happened in there?
Yeah. They are decimated by this thing, you know, and but what it is they were they had tried for the last 2 years before 1950, I don't know if you guys know this, they had gone, Mao had gone with Kim Il-sung to Stalin and said, we want to do this thing and take back the whole of the peninsula. No, he goes, they won't let us get away with it. You can't do it yet. So he wouldn't let them do it in 48, wouldn't let them do it in 49, and then there's that thing with, I think it was Dean Rusk, who he made a circle in the Far East, and the circle cut off between Korea and Japan. You guys know that story? And he made a declaration to the UN. This is what our American interests, and so that's what led Stalin to go. So the Americans are sending us. No, they're just stupid. But he thought we were sending a message saying, "Hey, Korea's all right." But he was wrong. It wasn't all right, you know.
So your point is that China, not so much on big moves, but just slow kind of seeping moves that don't expose. And again, I think one of the things I learned, and I think I learned it before I got back to be an instructor at the basic school. But it was, if you really, really want to do a good estimate of the situation, turn your map around. You assume the role of the enemy commander, and what would you be doing? And assume you're not stupid, right? And assume that you want to live to see next week. So if you were him, what would you be doing out there? And so I think it's interesting if you look and you become the Chinese for a minute and you look at the problem of where you are geographically, right, you know, the big event is not in your interest.
Yeah.
Right? The small, you know, you can undermine a nation financially, you can take over its port, you can grow your navy, but you're still screwed geographically. And that's why when you say, hey, we're in the South China Sea, you know, and you start looking at it like, well, fuck the South China Sea. We don't need to go in there. We need to control the Malaccan Straits. And the only reason we need to do that is because we've got to be able to allow Malaysia, Thailand, right, Cambodia, you know, Vietnam is an ally. We need them to be able to function economically. So we would have to fight, you know, through it. But once we control that, screw the Spratly Islands. I mean, again, we'd vaporize them. But so you start looking at the problem, and you say, okay, and then what happens? We can blockade China? We can shut their oil off? Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. You know, I think that's a good, that could work. But here's the thing, too. You got to think, so the Chinese get the Spratly Islands, and they don't really, they're a totalitarian government. But is there really such a thing anymore in today's day and age? I mean, a totally totalitarian government. So they can say to their folks, look, we took this back from the Americans. We think that it's going to be possible before our grandfathers are dead, before our grandchildren are all dead, for us to take back Taiwan, you know? And so that type of miscalculation, and it might not be a miscalculation, because you might have people who say, what do we care about Taiwan? Right? And so...
Well, I think... But again, going back to the way that you were talking about not the drastic move, but, slowly undermining it, slowly, you know, putting more and more pressure, the threat that we will come and wipe everybody out, and then slowly but surely a government gets elected in Taipei, in Taiwan, that says, okay, we'll make a deal with you. If you promise not to invade us, right, we will give you, you know, whatever, you know, we will give you all the rights around the island, we'll give you this, we'll give you that, so it's, I think, more along, it makes more sense once you rotate the map and become Chinese, that we will do the boa constrictor event with all these islands.
And yeah, I have to tell you, just incidentally, right now in Taiwan, they're going, all the hardliners are going, see, look what's going on in Hong Kong right now. Is that what you want? You know?
Right.
And they're like, you know, like they're saying, hey.
Yeah, they're having an election. They have an election in, like, I think in December. And so the moderates are all, you know, all the, you know, they're people are pointing at the moderates and saying, that's what you want? You want us to be them? Because they got told.
Yeah.
They got told.
They believe the Chinese,
right? How do you know the Chinese are lying? Their lips are moving.
Smiling.
Right. It's interesting. You know, there's so much written about, right, the South China.
Nothing more interesting.
Right. Go ahead.
Finish your thought.
But as you begin to pull it out, it's almost like, you know, the hypersonic missile. Okay, well, now you can't see anymore. So now what? Let me rethink that. And the same thing, like Spratly Island, South China Sea. Wait a minute, if shit starts there, we don't need to go in there. we'll range that son of a bitch from everywhere, and we'll close down around it. We'll blockade the Chinese, and we'll probably lose some ships and we'll lose some sailors, but we, along with our allies, we can manage that. And you're looking at it going, holy shit, man. I'm glad I'm us and not them, because they would be screwed in that one.
Yeah, what you're saying about when you turn the map around, that's why before we were talking about Iran and in Iraq, why I'm so nervous, that's what I was doing. I was going, okay, if I'm looking, from an Iranian point of view, where is America vulnerable? And how have I made them look like shit before? And so the Chinese don't have as topical an example as the Iranians do, because us and the Chinese haven't really crossed swords since 1953. But, I guess there's been some naval skirmishes and stuff, but they use proxies now. I think that's what the lesson of the Korean War was for them. You deal with the Americans, use proxies. So they back up North Vietnam, I think there might be a little bit of finance stuff going on for them in other conflicts we've been in.
When you begin to pull apart what the South China Sea would look like, and you could see, General Berger, right, as you think this through, what would the Marine Corps? The Marine Corps would not be, brigades in the assault, because given the lethality of weapons, all you're doing, right, is giving them a target to destroy. But companies that control, radar and comm relays that you have to have in order to do target acquisition, that you turn on, you turn off, and you move. I mean, now you can see, wow, it would be this dynamic event based on movement and your ability to regenerate comm and radar to do target acquisition. And all of a sudden, but do you need to go in there? And I think it. And so, to me, I just thought it was.
We have Patriot missiles and shit like that in Vietnam. We'd be back. You'd be back in the land of love you long time stuff, And it's just ironic. It's just ironic. The fortunes of nations. I think we would be. I think that's a worthwhile ally to have.
Who?
Fucking
being
man.
Right. Well,
I bet we eventually anyway.
Well, to me, what's been interesting, having Grant Newsham on the program is, just the arrogance of the Chinese and the Nine Dash Line, right? Yeah. Everybody's got a 200-mile economic exclusion area off their coast where those mineral rights belong to you. The Chinese just said, hey, fuck you. Our Nine Dash Line goes down the Vietnamese coast, over to Malaysia, across to the Philippines, and if you don't like it, fuck you. Right? Yeah. The Spratling Islands are 900 miles south of China.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. And so, I'm the bully, and the United States won't stand up to us, so we'll do what we will. Okay. Which is interesting. So then you go to the logical extreme, and that is, okay, what happens when the shooting starts? And we're going to fight. And then you start looking at it, and you're like, whoa, it's a vastly different problem than it appeared from afar. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. It is. Hey, I gotta say one thing, though, because I didn't get a chance to get in there. On Desperate Ground, I started reading it because Jeff enthusiastically recommended it. If you don't hate Ned Alman enough now in your life, at this point in your life, read that book.
But here's the great thing with that book, Timmy. At the end of the book, near the end, he, because MacArthur just pretended like that never happened.
Right.
He never mentions it. But Alman's like, the Marines, he goes, you guys, he really fucked you on this one, but I'll tell you, the 7th Infantry Division was on the other side of the reservoir. The only guys of theirs who got away were the ones who crossed the ice.
Right.
And there's some horrific stories about wounded guys, who were trying to get across the ice. It's like 30 below zero. I mean, it hurts my feet just to think about it. Right. But Almond, at the end, he kind of redeems himself a little bit, or at least he admits that he was wrong, and he actually cooperates in some stuff with Smith. But you're absolutely right, man. You just the bare bones what's going on here? Get to the part about Seoul. You really start to
hate
the guy.
That's what I was reading. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
What did I read recently that said that, and it might have been that there was, and it might have been because of the discussions ongoing with North Korea, that there had been more information given about Task Force Faith, right?
Yes, that's all over the book.
Right, and that they didn't crumble, that they fought, right?
Yeah.
And is that so yeah, anyway, interesting stuff.
They fought their ass off, but they were spread out, and because they did exactly what Almond told them to do, Smith, at every turn, he tried to maintain interior lines, he tried to maintain, support with, mutual support with his moving regiments there and stuff, and, this guy, the 7th Infantry Division, did not. They just got ate up, And the Faith, though, is a good dude. I mean, there's an incident in there where Almond comes and just does the MacArthur thing. He's pulling silver stars out of his pocket. He pins one on Faith. And Faith's like, sorry, I didn't do anything, And then, ironically, the guy, he's one of the people. They were like in little groups of 50 here, 200 there, It was like, horrific. They really go into that, though. Task Force Drysdale, you guys know about that.
Right.
Where it got from 1st Marine Regiment area, they send this task force led by a British Royal Marine Lieutenant Colonel up there,
hold on. We're being pretty vague. We're assuming everybody knows. So, first of all, when we talk about Task Force Faith, 1st Marine Division is going up the western side of the reservoir. Yeah. And Faith is supposed to go up the eastern side.
Right.
Okay, so it's this two-pronged advance, and Task Force Faith gets wiped out.
Yeah.
And it was thought for years that they didn't fight well, and then, I guess recent evidence has come to light that they fought their ass off, and they essentially buy time for the 5th Marines and 7th Marines to close in on Hagaru Rhee, where the rest of the division was, and so Task Force Faith is integral in the 1st Marine Division being able to consolidate.
And then Smith feels terrible. He's in a hell of a fight. He can't help those guys.
Right.
So as soon as they're fighting.
Okay, hold on. You say Smith. Tell everybody who you're talking about.
Oh, I'm talking about General O.P. Smith,
okay.
The CG of the 1st Marine Division in 1950. And while they're fighting this major battle every night, he managed to infiltrate folks across, and they're actually driving on the ice, picking up army refugees, army E&E people who had gotten off, and the Chinese, they're in rough ways too. They're like, they catch these Chinese fellows with their feet black and coming off from frostbite, and it was the motor T officer for the division, Lieutenant Colonel, I can't remember his name right now, but he goes out there with one Jeep every day picking guys up. And there's this one soldier had horrific bad luck. I mean, by good luck because he survived, but you're thinking there's no way this guy's going to live. And he got picked up by the motor T battalion commander. Yeah, it's a very good book. And I'll tell you that what it does, though, is it tells you, and a lot of the Chinese, like, what's his name? Remember Major Lee, the guy with the Navy Cross from there? We had him come to IOC when I was the director. But I think we had him there when we were just captains, too. He had the Navy Cross.
Yeah, I do remember him, yeah.
Yeah, he was known as being a cantankerous guy. He was very cantankerous when we had him, when I was the director. And, he told a great combat story about that. Like he's the guy that Lieutenant Colonel Davis picked to lead them from where they were in the 7th Marines area to get to Tak Tong Pass overland instead of being on the roads. And they went over all these ridges, icebound ridges and stuff, using their the land nav, I'm talking TBS type land nav.
Right, right, right.
And the compass was so, it was so damn cold, the compass wasn't working.
Right.
And not only that, their brains weren't working. Like, there's a story where General, well, then, eventually General Davis, but then Lieutenant Colonel Davis is talking to Lee, and they're both speaking idiocy because they're so cold and they're so exhausted.
Yeah.
And but they get, they manage to do it, you know. Yeah. And when they get to it, they're trying to get that one company from 2-7 Fox Company, commanded by Captain Barber. And they get there, and these guys are like on their ass, you know. And they're, it's just a, I'll tell you this. It's, I never read. I read a lot about Barber, and I read a lot about individual guys like Caffaretta. He's all over that book too. Private Caffaretta from New Jersey,
right,
who never went to boot camp,
right,
you know, who got the Medal of Honor, and they it's very compelling stories that they tell about that,
right,
and
right.
You never I think that will always be the worst battle, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine conditions worse than that that anybody would fight it. What about okay, any final thoughts about the Chinese amphibious shit, the South China Sea? Jeff, any final thoughts on that?
No, I think I pretty much got, I'll tell you what, though. You guys, I didn't know that they're really pushing new amphibs. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of disconcerting.
Yeah, no. Power projection, right? You want to truly project power. You know, get in the amphib business.
You know about that big parade they had on the 70th anniversary? There's a bunch of newspaper articles that came out just in the last couple of days about China's huge new, you know, military might, as evidenced by the 70th, you know, anniversary parade.
Right.
I thought that's why you wanted to bring this up today.
No. I got on the discussion of, you know, what would happen in South China Sea, and we got to talk about that, and then I kind of was looking at the map, and you know, I never really kind of looked at the, you know, at okay, if it starts kinetically, and again, along with everything else that would happen, right, the cyber war, the satellites being knocked out, the EMP shit that would get unleashed, and all the rest of it, right? Okay, so now you're going to fight. At some point, you're going to close on the area, and you're going to fight. What does it look like? What is in our interest? And then the thing that jumped out at me, and I just wanted to talk to you guys, because I wonder if you guys had any, you know, any thoughts that would change my thinking on it. And it was, you know, they are geographically fucked. And I go back to, you know, General Tulin's point about, you know, they're contained, and all those countries are allies of ours. And China's played rough with all those guys, you know, with Malaysia, with Vietnam, with the Philippines, you know, and with Taiwan, you know, and where would the, you know, how would all that shake out? So I wanted to talk about it with you guys. Timmy, any final thoughts about it?
Well, not necessarily about China, but let me say this. Mrs. Smith, what a find, bro. Jesus. That was interesting.
Yes, you're right.
You know, that was awesome. The, you know, and even you know, at the end, when I asked her the current events question, I said, so that attack, who was that purpose for? And she said, well, there's probably a variety of answers for that. And then she said, you know, part of it is to show that we have more than you think we have. And so if you want to go there, if nobody wants to help us, and this is where this goes, it's not going to go the way you think. And I thought that was something that I hadn't thought of, because I didn't see, right? I thought it was exclusively for internal consumption, which is what made sense to me, which is why, you know, why it's cool to have people like Mrs. Smith on, who will undoubtedly make us smart, on things Iranian in the future. And no, I mean, how awesome was that?
Yeah, that's like listening to Grant. She's the Grant Newsom for Iran. It was cool.
Yeah,
and it would seem that Jeff and I, as we were tripping through our assessments, we were pretty much on. You know, I mean, that she validated pretty much the way we were looking at things.
What was her thing? Was she in Iran, or was she like a State Department person, or what was the?
She's Iranian.
Her name's Mrs. Smith.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all I could tell you.
Like, There's a Mr. Walker here to see you.
Exactly.
When they come in the embassy. They ever tell you that? I had a North Vietnamese guy defect to me when I was on embassy duty in Iran?
No.
Yeah, we had this thing that said, if someone comes in and they have to be from another country, they can't be from Iran, they'll say, I want asylum. If someone comes in and says that, and we had a little thing, asylum note, right, and said, you call this number, and it was in the basement of the embassy chancery building, and this pale-looking, but in-shape-looking CIA dude would come up and grab him and take him downstairs, and then they would be spirited away. And this North Vietnamese guy came up, and he says in broken English, I'm so-and-so, lieutenant colonel in the North Vietnamese Army, or the Vietnamese Army then, right? Because a year after they fell, and the South fell, and he says, and I want to defect to the United States. I'm like, holy shit, it's one of them. I didn't do anything except exactly what I just read it off the card.
There you go. Now, I thought it was really interesting, just the way she explained how they elect presidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
The economic power of the IRGC and how that came to be. And so, you know, as a way of sustaining our own power, this formidable force that has developed throughout the Iran-Iraq war, we're not letting them go anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So what do we do with them? We'll give them all contracting authority, and we'll let them do all this stuff, and they can get a slice, and then there you go. There's our internal police. And so, I sat here and listened to her, you know, again, pull the curtain back and begin to explain to you things that you don't understand. And their view of, like, our view of, like, yeah, the Shah was a great guy, and then this guy, Khomeini, well, you know, that the fact that the United States allowed the overthrow of what they believed was somebody that was duly elected by the Iranian people was, you know, as she explained it, was the beginning of people looking at the United States and say, yeah, you're not really for us.
Yeah.
You're not really for it. So, no, it was awesome.
You gotta listen to it, Jeff. She's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, boys. First of all, I appreciate always having you on and your insight and your questions, as well as your literary recommendations to everybody, because I know people listen and they go buy those books. So, well done. Thanks for the visit.
Thank you, buddy.
You have it. Tim Lynch and Jeff Kinney. More of Albany Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.